All right, she scared me.
Hi, Kevin.
Me.
I got you.
You got me.
Let's stay curious. Keep an open mind. And as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry about that. Welcome to the 40th episode of Walsh Wednesday. Since the start of the spookiest month of the year lands on a Wednesday, we had to celebrate by visiting one of the Hudson Valley's spookiest locations, Kevin McCurdy's Haunted Mansion. For nearly 50 years in the Hudson Valley, this haunted attraction continues to be filled with immersive and spine-tingling elements and mesmerizing special effects guaranteed to make you jump, scream, and share the spine-tingling fun with friends and family. Always improving and changing each year, there are always more intricate haunted mazes, creative twists, and live character performances that will both entertain and terrify, adhering to the tradition that Kevin McCurdy's Haunted Mansion visitors have cherished for decades. My buddy Trevor and I were invited to tour the Haunted Mansion while they were still building this year's attractions before the season opens on October 3rd. Before we even get into the tour, we got to sit down with the creative masterminds of this Hudson Valley Halloween staple. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fun Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation. Hey there, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and we got a great episode for you guys today. It is spooky season here in the Hudson Valley, and we are in one of the spookiest places we could possibly be, a mainstay of the Hudson Valley, Kevin McCurdy's Haunted Mansion, and we are sitting down with two of the people who are running it, along with a lot of other cool and spooky things around the corner. With us today, we have Kevin McCurdy and Holly Dillon. Guys, how are you?
Good. We're great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having us here. This really means a lot.
Oh,
and as I emailed you originally, I took my girlfriend here. She's not from the Hudson Valley.
Okay.
Love this. It's like, when are we coming back?
Cool.
So yeah, no, it was a really fun experience to be like, hey, this is like a legendary place here. I got to show you this. So
next year is going to be 50 years.
50 years, which is insane. Yeah. Walk us through that. 50 years of legacy in the Hudson Valley doing this. Did you expect to be doing this here, this Haunted Mansion, for 50 years?
I don't know. I don't know if I ever really thought about it like that. It's just like I was just always looking forward to the next year because it was always like, how do we make it better?
Yeah.
You know, how do we bring a new story every year? And it was just the fun and excitement of, you know, thinking this up. I mean, as a kid, I started when I was 15.
Nice.
You know, so like I was in just going in high school. I mean, it was the thing to do, you know, after we all got out of school. We'd come down and work on the Haunted Mansion and whatever. And we worked on it like all year round.
Nice.
And just, but we always, you know, thought, you know, what are we doing this year? So, you know, I don't know how it got to be 50 so quick.
Yeah. How'd you bribe everybody to help you out at the time?
Yeah.
If it was like at 15, were you paying everybody or was it just like pizza and this would be cool, guys?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, really, seriously, like we had more people here. This was all volunteer until year 30-something, 32
really?
Or something like that.
That long into
and we had more people then than we do now, you know. but we still have a lot. And some of those people are still here. And we have a lot of great people that have hung on for many, many years. And a lot of new people coming in and younger people that have so much talent.
That's awesome. I would imagine after 50 years, you'd have a revolving door of folks.
Oh, it's unbelievable. You have a lot of people who just they come back all the time. But it's interesting because you almost have your different generations that come in.
Yes.
We've seen way too many of them. But you really do. You start it, developed it, and then it got a little further, got more people into it. And then as people's lives grew, other people came in.
Yeah.
And it is pretty incredible how many people have come through. Heaven knows how many people have worked with here.
Yeah.
And some really amazing careers have developed from just starting here.
Mm-hmm. That's
awesome. You know, with Kevin going, hey, I have an idea, and everybody, you know, they all give their advice and they create together. And here he is.
All these years.
50 years later.
Yep. Yeah, that's the thing I think we're most proud of is after all these years, so many people have gotten a chance to, like, you know, practice their talents or hone their skills or learn something.
Yeah.
And this place has been around for that for all these years. And that's the thing I'm most proud of, actually, is all these kids have come and gone and gone to Hollywood and they're special effects makeup artists or going to Las Vegas and they're magicians. Mm-hmm. And it's
wow.
just, it's amazing to think how many of them. And then some of the people, you know, their kids are now working here. So that's even
fun.
Crazier.
Yeah. That's fun to be able to have created something like that. Holly, were you here in the beginning when he was starting 15 or when did you come
into
play?
Not in the very, very beginning. I did come in when he was still across the street, which he'll explain that, I'm sure. And then not in the very, very beginning, just before we came to this new place. So
okay.
probably subtract about 7 years.
That's still pretty good.
It's still pretty good.
That's still pretty
it's a
good.
Long time.
Yeah. So what did that look like in the beginning as a volunteer effort? You're 15, mm-hmm. you're in high school, mm-hmm. you're getting your friends together to do this, which is sick, by the way. We would have loved to have been doing something like this in high school.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I did do a couple of like haunted houses, small stuff, but that's so cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, walk us through that. Like, what inspired you to do something like that? Because I feel like that's something like a teenager is always saying, it's like, we should do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But how many actually go and do it?
Yeah, it was, my parents were very supportive.
Nice.
And I was a magician, young magician at the time. And I was actually hired to do a magic show for the grand opening of Baldwin Park.
Nice.
And so I went down there with my mom and my dad, and I did this magic show in this building and said, I had already been doing a haunted house in my basement for like 4 years.
Nice.
The last year I hung a sign up by the road, said haunted house, 25 cents. And there was people lined up on the road. They all came down, went through our garage, you know.
That's cool.
And so when I did this magic show here, I was 15, like I said, and I just said, man, you know, this would make the greatest haunted house. Look at this old building.
Yeah.
And so we wrote a letter to the county. Back then, life was simple. Can I do a haunted house? And they went, yes. And that was the end of it, you know. And the next thing you know, we got this building and we're hanging up black plastic and doing kind of, you know, crazy walls and, you know, just hanging skeletons up. It was very simple the first year. But I think there wasn't very many haunted houses around. There was the J.C.'s always had haunted houses around the country. And the Rhinebeck J.C.'s had a haunted house back then for years. It was all done in blacklight. That's all I remember. And I used to go there as a kid. And that was the only thing around. And so we had the first year, I think admission was $1, 50 cents for kids. And I think the first year we had 5,000 people came through.
Oh, my God.
And I think, I don't know, we were under the, not the JCs, but I think the Rotary Club at that time. So, but I just thought it was amazing. It was just like, holy camoly. And I think they gave me a ticket or something like that. And I went out and bought a video camera because video cameras had just came out. So, you know, that added a whole thing to what to do after school besides haunted houses.
Yep.
We make movies.
Yeah.
But it was always like magic movies, horror movies, and the horror stuff. I mean, this is kind of a culmination of liking to do illusions, you know, storytelling, movies, and so forth. And that's, I guess, why I liked, you know, the idea of doing a haunted house.
Absolutely. So after all these years, since you said that you got into the magic, here you have the Haunted Mansion, the escape rooms, which we'll get into more in a little bit. Do you see yourself more as a Halloween horror kind of guy, or do you see yourself more as an illusionist?
That's a very interesting question. Yeah. A lot of people, we're really entertainers.
Entertainers.
Our haunt has always been different. It has always been more of a theatrical experience.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, you know, rush you through. I mean, although we do chase you with a chainsaw, of course. But we like to present, we like to think up this story, this backstory, and every year it changes.
Nice.
And I think that's what we really like to do. And it's evident with our parent company, which is Imagine Our Studios. Like you said, we do other things too. And no matter what it is, it's really, we're kind of storytellers. And this is the way to, you know, use our ability to do that.
Yeah, scratch that itch.
Special effects and actors and this and that. But yeah, it's always, you know, the mansion's always been a favorite. It was, you know, basically my life since I was 15.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I always say that. It's his baby. You know?
Exactly.
It really is. He created it.
Now, Holly, where does your inspiration come from all of this? What was your introduction to this world? Were you a horror fan? Were you a magic fan, illusion fan, theatrics? What was like your step into the door.
It's interesting. It's more of the theatrical point of view. I heard about this place down at the park, you know, and I'm like, you can go and you can act and you can improv, which I thought was really great too.
Yeah.
So I came down, saw it, and went, hey, this is pretty cool. Not bad. And then a little time went by as well. And we met up yet again doing children's theater.
Oh, wow.
And I was acting and then helped produce and a whole bunch of different things. So it's more along the lines of theatrical and I would definitely say entertaining. Mm. Because like here, we want people to get scared. They go, scare me, you know. But you know what? If you can't scare them, if you make them chuckle, or at least leave going, I had a pretty good time. That was different and that was cool. That's what it's all about. Yeah. And I really do think, and hate to speak for you, but for Kevin and everybody, that's what it's about. Yeah. It's, you know, we created something and that worked. Oh, it scared them. Oh, they loved it. They made them laugh. And you, all the talents put into this of creating it, that's a good feeling. You go, ah, wow, I did that.
Yeah.
You know, and so many people who helped to do this. It's incredible. And I think that's kind of what it is. What can we create?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's all, you know, it's all theatrical.
Right? Amazing.
Yeah.
That's cool. As somebody who's had a very theatrical background in my own right, I do entertainment media for a living. I'm a musician as well. I feel that. And I love the fact of being able to tell these stories, whatever shape or form they may come into. Mm-hmm. And I love Halloween. Trevor behind the camera, you'll be hearing him in a little bit. But we were talking before we got here, just some of our favorite haunted houses experiences. And even as you're saying, the chuckling part, you know, some of the funniest experiences we've had in haunted houses. Not just scary, but funny. And but that's some of the best stuff.
It is.
Kind of like the spoopy.
Right?
The spoopy compared to the spooky. Right. Yeah.
Well, it's easy. You know, it's easier to scare somebody if you've just made them laugh.
Yes.
Like that's the whole psychological thing behind it. If I'm laughing and I'm in that emotion, it's easier for us to come and then scare you.
It totally
so
catches you.
So we like to
do
that. That little roller coaster of laughing and screaming.
That is fun. Yeah. Before we get into what people can expect going on this year, with almost 50 years of legacy here, I'm curious, what was like one of, I would love to hear from each of you, one of the favorite attractions that you've done over the years? Because as you said, you change it up, you make it different. It's not just the same thing every year. Mm. Was there a certain thing, I know there's probably a lot to be proud of, but are there certain moments that have stuck with you guys that you want to share?
For me, I think it's a close tie. It's a tie.
Okay.
But the first one was definitely the year we did the mummy.
Okay.
And we built an entire facade on top of this building of this big Egyptian temple. We had 10,000 tons of sand, white sand brought in, and we rented a camel, a live camel. So we were just talking about this the other day, and it was like, remember that night? It was a Friday the 13th. It was a full moon.
Perfect.
And we had a line all the way down the entrance road, and you got to take your picture with a real camel and the mummy, and it was just crazy. And then of course Castle Dragonstone, which was a favorite, where we did the exact same thing, built a giant castle, and it was a cool year too. So
neat. That is so cool.
Different. What's your second one? What's your
that was it, the castle. Dragonstone.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah. Holly, what about you?
I kind of, the one thing I tend to remember most often, and I don't know why, and I don't know what we would label it, the one with the Tim Curry character.
Tim Curry.
When another actor, Paul, came up.
He was dressed in this big, you know, remember that movie Legend?
Legend. Right? So when he was the devil in that.
Devil demon character.
That is one of the best designs, I got
to
say.
Stuff to do. And I just see, to me, I remember things like that because I thought it was great with having him with all this makeup and his big head on. And
But you remember it. I know why you remember it. It's because we actually did a flying rig for him.
Yeah.
We had just enough height where he would start at the top of this cave, jump off and come down and land right in front of you.
Yeah.
Of course, it was a kiddie pool, a waterfall, you know, going. And of course, the cable got stuck and lowered him down right into the kiddie pool. You know, so
it could have been worse. If it was in the pool, that's not too bad.
It was just like, and right into the water, and he was just sitting there.
Yeah.
That's probably what we did. That so many funny stories. I mean, you could write a book with all the
You should. That would be great. If you ever find a moment, that would be good.
Yeah. Right down to, remember the Ghostbusters thing that we did back?
Way back. Way back. Ghostbusters 2 had just coming out.
That's right.
We bought the Ecto ambulance from
did you?
From Joe Q and Poughkeepsie had made one. And so years later, we purchased it. So we had the Ghostbusters drive up, and we had created a head of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man as wide as that building. And we put it on the roof. And then what we did was the Ghostbusters drive up. We'd walk this head up the roof toward you.
Which was horribly dangerous.
Of course, it was only like a few of us that could do it, like get on the roof at night, right?
Yeah.
But we're still alive. But we'd walk this head up, and all of a sudden we had – you know, lights go off, and then the head would kind of sink backwards. And then we must have bought every bag of marshmallows from every store, and we threw marshmallows on the crowd of this whole area. And they're like, these are marshmallows.
Yeah. That's amazing.
They were eating it up.
I was going to say, I probably would be too.
Yeah, I was up there. I remember I was really scared.
Yep.
I just got up there, and I'm kind of like throwing like a hand grenade, just kind of holding on over your life, going, you know. But
The things we did when we were young and silly.
Fun stuff.
That's fantastic.
We don't do anything dangerous anymore.
No, we don't. Got that?
No, but that's fantastic. That's thought I was having fun. I was the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man for Halloween one year.
Oh, yeah.
I had an inflatable costume. I walked around my high school in it, and of course I had the mask on, and everybody's like, who the hell's that in there? That was my thing. I liked wandering places.
Where,
but besides that, with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, Trevor, do you remember when I did that and I got heat exhaustion from it and I passed out? Got to be careful about that. That was a fun time.
Yeah.
So talking about the ones that are some of your favorites, I'm sure there are a couple of things. I feel like every creative has this where it's like, ooh, this, if I knew what I knew now, this could have been better. If I had this, it could have been better.
Yeah.
Are there certain moments that you look back on and you're like, if I could do this with the info I have now, I would love to redo it.
Oh, yeah.
Are there certain things that come to your mind, either one of you?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, before we had some issues with the building, we started creating the sets, which are just kind of on hold right now until next year.
Mm-hmm.
But we did a theme many years ago. It was about a ventriloquist dummy named Sammy.
Nice.
And you were entering this old theater. And so we were going to redo that theme.
Oh, my God. Yes. Turn around more. Show for the camera.
Okay. Sammy made me do it. There you go.
But amazing.
She's got her Sammy Made Me Do It shirt on. But,
perfect.
But anyway, we had we had done it in a glow in the dark room with a ventriloquist puppet that somebody puppeteered to come out and walk out. And we had seats rigged. They poked you in the back when he brought out his little dagger. You'd feel something on your back and so.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really cool. But that was back in the day. So we had a whole high tech version of that theme planned last year. And now, of course, we were 3D printing at our shop. We were 3D printing all the Sammy parts, all the heads, and we were going to servo control all of these dummies so the Sammy made appearances all the way through.
Wow.
So I mean, it's kind of on hold right now, but yes, that's one
it's something
that I thought, and we went ahead, and we'll continue to process that one.
It just goes to show when you have that kind of legacy and that the fact that you can and are still moving forward, you do have the opportunity to go back and be like, what cool to revisit this.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
It's a great thing because you can revisit something from decades ago.
Yeah. And it'll still feel fresh to new audiences.
Well, old is new, right?
Yeah.
And with the new technology, it's even better.
There's one thing, though, that I don't think could have got any better. And it was a long time ago. We did a train, a ghost train. This was a train station. And Jamie Dillon over there kind of headed up this project, and we made it the whole front the whole front quarter of the mansion was a train car. And you actually got on the train car, and the whole train moved back and forth, and it was really, really cool.
Neat.
And, I don't think it really would get any better than that today. Mm-hmm. But it was really funny. What we're talking about is as people got on and left the station, there was actor or tech people outside that were moving the station sign past the windows. You know what I mean? So it was just like so old school. And then the light would go by like ding, 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 ding.
That's
ding,
perfect ding, though. Ding, it works.
It was so funny, but yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, I maybe do that
but
the same
way. But it's funny. You did that way, way back.
Yeah.
Before all the technology
before
was
theater,
here.
Before projection.
And now the technology is here. And there have been many things that you've done here.
Yeah.
That in time were developed further and like that, like most people now know now, by special effects or special technology. So it is kind of cool. The early stages.
Yeah.
You know.
The practical stuff is so cool, though.
Yeah.
When you can do something practically, it makes a difference.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Holly, was there anything in your experience, like if you ever had a chance to like redo, would you or could you?
Redo. Would or could.
I think the other one is the submarine. I don't want to take your question, but
go ahead.
No. Say the submarine.
No,
that
honestly,
way we can talk about the submarine.
No, I honestly can't think of anything.
Yeah.
But that's also a great thing too, because that just goes to show like you're proud of the moments and you're looking towards the future
tend
still
to look
too.
At it like, well, that worked.
Yeah.
It's great. Or okay, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, you'd be a fool to say everything always works.
Yeah.
So that's why it's pretty hard to pull that up. And you know, that's why I'm kind of at a loss to say what that would be.
That's
fair. You just kind of move on and go, okay, because that does happen.
Mm-hmm.
You have lots of high expectations of something.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, it didn't work.
Yeah.
You know?
Second weekend. We have a running joke around here. Second weekend.
So we,
you know, the first time you're open to the public and they're coming through and you see what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you're always tweaking things.
Yes.
We tell our cast, you know, this is an evolving thing. It will evolve to the last day we're open. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the actors, they come through here, and Kelly can probably tell you more about this. But they're great. They're people who they're either young kids that are in high school that are in the drama club and they want to practice their improv skills. They're so great. And they come up with ideas themselves, and we encourage that. We tell them right from the beginning, if you have ideas, you come to us, and because we want to encourage your creativity.
That's awesome.
It's
interesting all about that
you said that, because it's true. First started out with way back, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was mainly all younger kids.
Oh yeah.
And now we have such a variety of ages.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful because you know, as this type of industry grew, more and more people went, I always wanted to do that. And it didn't matter if they were 17 or 35. And they went, you know what? I'm going to do that too. So that demographic not only grew with the audience, but it also grew with cast and crew.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this year. As you said, you're changing it up. Right now, you guys are still getting everything together.
Yep.
What can people expect out of this new season?
Well, we got a lot of new ideas, as we always do. We like to change everything up. We have different scenes that you go through and tie together with a story. So the story is called The Keeper, and it's about this Crypt Keeper like character who keeps all the lore, legends, and horror from Halloween's, and he has them in this old library of books. And tonight there's a new story being written, and it's starring you.
Mm-hmm.
And what ending it will have depends on what you do.
Wow.
So that's the idea. So you have to go through an old creepy garden to get there. We have Sweet Tooth and Sons, the evil candy company, where you will see different things happening. It starts off nice and sweet, and then it turns a little evil. We have Dollhaven Hollow, which is a new
You said doll, and I'm like, that one gets to me.
Yeah, the whole village is, basically inhabited by possessed dolls. And then we have our new Fisherman's Wharf we're going to do, and then a trip through London where we meet many characters. Mrs. Lovett.
Mrs. Lovett. Sweeney Todd.
Yes.
Sweeney Todd. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Wow.
And of course, Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper.
A London
Fantastic.
Fog maze. And we have our pumpkin area, our scarecrow area.
Yes,
we have our cemetery, some of the staples, but we always do a new story no matter what.
New That's
characters.
Awesome.
We have a lot of new characters this year.
Oh, yeah.
So we've definitely have broken it up. If anyone was here last year, it'll seem
it'll
very
be a whole
different.
New thing.
I mean, we're doing stuff on The Last of Us, right?
Really?
Sort of.
The twist. Get that clear.
With a twist.
But exciting
here.
Nice. Yes.
That's so cool. Yeah. And funny you say Jack the Ripper. My girlfriend's in, she studied criminal justice. That's what she went for her master's for.
Okay.
She's working for the state police.
Wow.
But one of her favorite cases to ever worked on in her grad school was like researching Jack the Ripper.
Really?
And, so she's fascinated by that. So
nice.
Soon as she hears that,
it's
like we're going. We're going. Also, we love Sweeney Todd too. We saw Josh Groban's rendition in the city too.
Yeah, cool. Oh, really?
Fantastic.
Okay. Yeah, very cool.
It's a really good run.
Nice. Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
So when it comes to people coming through here, obviously people have been coming with their families for a long time now, and there's a number of folks that have an idea of what to expect, but for anybody who's brand new or for the new attraction, are there certain ages this is best for? How long people can plan to be here?
Sure.
What should people do when they are planning a trip to Kevin McCurdy's Haunted Mansion?
Okay. Ages, it's always tough. We get so many phone calls. And, you know, as I have a child that's 8, I have a child that's 9, I have a child that's 10.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't recommend that you bring anybody under 8 years old. It is 8, right? Check it myself.
Is it 8 or 10?
I think it's 8. Okay.
I think it's 8.
We're going to call it
8. I think it's 8, yeah.
But, you know, if your child is very scared, then no. You know, you have to use your own judgment.
We have
8-year-olds that go through here with no problem, and we have 20-year-olds that come out crying. So, you know, like, it's really hard for me to tell you that.
We know some of those people, Trev.
And don't force your children to come, because
we do see that sadly, and it's very wrong. It's just so we have people that try to bring infants, young toddlers.
No, we don't encourage that at all.
No.
We do not encourage it at all.
And we have a kids' day. We have a kids' day, which is Monday, Columbus Day.
Fantastic.
It's like 12 to 4-ish or something like that. We have magic show. We have pumpkin painting. We have all kinds of stuff for them to do. And a friendly trick-or-treat trail.
Friendly trick-or-treat, yeah.
Where they get some candy.
That's
fun.
That's
the way to do it.
That's the time to bring the little ones. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And then it takes, last year the show timed out at about 45 minutes. So it takes somewhere in that neighborhood.
Gotcha.
You know.
Depending on your scare level.
Yeah. If you're running right through.
And they're afraid. That's just it. With people, they're so different.
Yep.
Some will run right through. Some will be like, I'm not going over there.
Right.
It varies.
Yeah.
But that's awesome, though. Yeah. And that's such a cool thing to do. Now, I want to get into a subject that I just recently learned.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that you guys were behind the escape rooms. You have some in the area, and you do it nationwide, too. That's mind-blowing, and I didn't know. And I'm sure there's a lot of other people around the area that don't know that. They just know this, they don't know the widespread activity. So could you guys go into that for us?
Sure. We got our parent company, which is Imagine Art Studios.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing all kinds of creative themed attractions all over the country. And then when escape rooms became popular, we kind of fell into that niche because it's, again, what we like to do. It is storytelling. There's special effects involved. There's, you know, room effects involved, scenery, and that's what we like to do. So as of now, we've built 37 of them across the country, from San Antonio to Chicago to Virginia to Michigan. We've been all over the place.
All over.
And then during COVID, ironically, our project stopped for a little while. We said, you know what? We're using that building over there across from our shop to paint because we needed some extra space. Let's just open up our own now, because we see other businesses are doing very well. And so we opened up Escape Time Adventures. And fortunately for us, yes, it is right across the parking lot from our main shop and office.
Perfect.
And it worked out really well.
It is very good. But I lost my painting space. We have suffered a lot from that, for all the finishing and stuff.
But it's doing really well. Yeah, it's in our fourth year.
Amazing.
And we've had everybody, I mean, you'll see if you go on our website, escapetimeadventures.com, you'll see nothing but 5-star reviews. Everybody is the same thing. This is like going to Disney, you know, which of course I love to hear because I'm a big Disney fan.
Amazing.
I'm a big Disney nut. So anyway, we have The Lost Tomb. We have Dragon's Curse. We have Voodoo Swamp. Mm-hmm. And we have Master of Illusion, which is our 1940s murder mystery set in the Magic Mansion.
Okay.
Very similar to the Magic Castle.
Very neat. Oh, that's awesome. We'll have to check that out sometime. Fantastic. No, I'm really happy to hear about all of that. And it's cool to hear the variety that you have going on with not just like the Halloween season, but the theatrics, and that this is all year long. And to step outside of Halloween season, of course, I just want to make sure that people know this. The escape room's open all year round.
Our facility is over 376, and we're open all year long. We host parties. We have all kinds of different things over there.
When the seasons, because we go from this to Christmas, of course, when the seasons are over, we are usually, even like now, working on other projects for other places in the nation.
Nice.
You know? So we're constantly, a lot of people go, people have asked me constantly, what do you do the rest of the year?
I'm not surprised.
chaos. The rest of the year is just more chaotic than you could ever imagine.
But that's great.
We have several different things, not just escape rooms either. We do, you know, bars. We cut back a little bit on animatronics and stuff, but such a huge variety of things that keeps us real busy. So when this is done, we have that going, and luckily it's going very well.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll expand that as well. We have a lot of people asking us, when are you going to do another one? So maybe we'll get another facility.
Wow.
But in the meantime, we just go from one to another.
And this
we
year,
don't stop.
It's particularly busy down here because we have another thing going on.
Would you like to tell us about that?
I will tell you a little bit what I can.
What you can, of course.
we have a movie filming.
So cool.
This wonderful director, Lindsay. She's been trying to make this movie for about 3 or 4 years now.
Mm.
And it's going to happen. And it's going to happen in the middle of September. So it will have happened by the time you see this. They're shooting here. And so we're trying to plan on how to keep setting up our attraction while they're actually filming a movie. So
that is amazing.
It's going to be crazy. But we want to support her and her wonderful
it's a great movie.
Beautiful story.
It's a great story. You know, everyone goes, well, what's it about, a haunted house?
No.
It's like, no, it's really not. It's fantastic.
It's a very dramatic movie.
It's a very dramatic movie. It's about a girl kind of coming of age, and her family, not to give too much of it away, runs a haunted attraction.
There you go.
Hence, here you go. And as she always said, is I always pictured here. You know, this place.
Is she from here? Is that why she pictured that?
Yeah. Her family was from here in Westchester. Dad was the host of the Westchester Broadway Dinner Theater.
Oh my God. I love that place.
Steve Calloran. And he was just a fabulous man. And I got to know him again after we connected on this movie. She came walking up out of the
before we connected on the movie.
Yeah. And I said, oh, who are you? And we talked about it. And she said, well, my dad was Steve. And of course, I used to work there too. And I'm like, oh my God. So Steve and I connected. And he helped us with many projects too.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he's passed, but what a great man. And so we are,
we're happy to still have
still,
him in the video.
Yeah, very happy to help Lindsay pursue her dream of this movie.
Amazing.
So it is amazing. And it's going to be great. And it's going to be a wonderful experience, not only for having it here at the Haunted Mansion, but also for the people that she's got to from our crew that are helping her on the movie. So it's a great chance for them to get a little, again, going back to the, we like to encourage creativity.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, we made it so that some of our crew can get some experience.
Yes. The integration is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, that just worked out wonderfully.
To be working at a haunted house and be like, oh, by the way, you can also be on a movie set and work on this and get some movie credits. That's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, that's really
cool. Oh, my gosh. I've never worked on a full-fledged, big picture movie. I've been on a couple of TV show sets.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And even that's a huge production.
Yeah.
And I've been very grateful for that and to be able to see how that all works.
That's wonderful.
It's interesting. Many years ago, we had that up here with the American Haunters.
We did something called American Haunters for AMC.
AMC.
Yes.
The little interstitial kind of things that George Romero was the host.
Yes.
And, we just filmed.
I do remember that.
It was 14 episodes.
It was the
and
same
we were here till 2 in the morning. Poor Holly. She was just pouring rain. She was sleeping in the little gazebo.
I
there.
I
and, it, and they said, come on, it's your time to be interviewed. She gets up. She's like, one of the zombies.
It's interesting. It's a great experience, though. And with this one coming up, it's really great that some of our coworkers, kind of our family, can get that experience, see it one-on-one. It's very exciting.
Terrific. Yeah. Terrific. So obviously, of course, by the time that you are watching this, it's the very beginning of October. So there's still the whole month to enjoy everything. And then you have the holiday season. You have the Christmas season too.
That's right.
For anybody wondering, is that spooky Christmas or is that just Christmas?
No.
Because I know some people who like doing spooky Christmas.
Yes. And there are some out there. But we change. We literally change everything over.
Yep. We like to go. Yes. Scary to Mary in 3 weeks. That's what we do.
I like that. Scary to Mary.
Scary to Mary.
So on.
It's all we just take everything out, put everything up, and again the same thing. We try to offer different things every year on that as well.
Yeah.
So
that's a fun attraction. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And of course, where should people go to find their tickets and to learn more?
Sure. It's thehauntedmansion.com. And you'll find all the information on our website.
Terrific.
Yep.
And as we wrap up this part, we're about to do a walk around, of course, but as we wrap up this part of it, at least, is there any last little nugget that you want to leave with the Walsh Wednesday listening audience for those who maybe been here a while ago or never been here before? What do you say to them?
If you want to, you know, have a great experience and come do one of the longest running haunts, we may be the longest running haunt in the United States. We guarantee if you haven't been here before, it's a unique experience. And I think it's a more personal experience than going to a giant haunt. And we always like that. And that's what we, you know, that's what we pride ourselves on. So if you want something fun to do for Halloween and get out on a nice fall night, come on down and see us, and then or see us for Christmas. If Halloween's not your thing,
Christmas.
Or you Christmas. Come on down for Christmas.
There you go.
Absolutely. The chainsaw guy is only cutting down Christmas trees at that point.
There you go.
You let him off for the rest of the season.
Amazing.
And for the people who have come here, who've been watching and probably have come here, we thank you. Because we would never, ever have made it to 49, going to be 50, without the interest of people coming up. People putting what they can into it and just coming with their families and their groups and just having a good time.
Amazing.
We, you know, come again, because like we said, every single year we do something different, and you'll love it.
Amazing. Sounds great. And again, make sure that you check out everything. We'll have all the links in the description of this episode, so you don't have to haunt very far to try to find it all, of course. And really excited to see what this season brings.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much for having us
here.
Thank you. Very excited to have you. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Time to spend some time on this tour. Over here is the Western Town. For a couple of years now, they've done a spooky cowboy-esque Western scene which leads up to the mineshaft, which is full of haunting frights. This year, though, the Western Town will become The Infected, which is inspired by games and shows like The Last of Us. This is the Split Beam Mining Company. In the past, it's been known to house many creatures, including very large spiders. And that's even before they open. As you enter the shaft, you hear the screams of lost souls. Watch where you're going, or you may become one with the mine. There are passageways all throughout the shaft for the actors to be able to pop up and scare you in multiple places. And look, they even have trained spiders. That's how good and authentic they really are here. Time to get our feet wet in the Laser Swamp. This one tends to be a fan favorite. The lasers in the fog offer a layer of cover you have to wade through, and of course, you can't see what's underneath, making it easy for scare actors and props to spook you. This too will also be featured in the upcoming movie. Our next stop is the Victorian greenhouse that visitors can enter. But be careful, because they are growing some man-eating carnivorous plants. Something tells me Poison Ivy would shed a tear of joy if she saw this greenhouse. Another addition this year will be the Vampire Castle. They're putting together this facade, and there will be tons of vampires lurking around ready to suck your blood. There will be an animatronic vampire demon placed here later, and this giant bat will be attacking folks from the woods. Funny enough, the team has confused him for a bear at night. Honestly, I'm not sure which one I'd be more afraid of. Over here, they're accumulating props for Fisherman's Wharf. At the time of recording this, they still got plenty of work to do, creating the deck and moving around the boats. You can even see the sign that is aptly named Red Herring Cannery. Remember the Sammy Made Me Do It shirt? Well, here's one of the original Sammy dolls along with some of his freakish friends. Is it me, or are all of their eyes following us? Ooh, creepy. Eat your heart out, Willy Wonka. Welcome to the Sweet Tooth & Sons Candy Factory. Here is the entrance where you will meet Mr. Sweet Tooth. They're still building this candy machine here. Everything looks nice on this side. Mr. Sweet Tooth invites you in and offers you free samples. But as you wander through the factory, things get more and more demented. On the other side of the factory, beware of the taffy puller that pulls people apart. Willy Wonka only wishes he could do this. I see you, you demented lunatic. Mr. Sweet Tooth is going to be played by one of their incredible actors, and here to talk about the actors is the cast manager, Kelly, who is also Holly's daughter. Horror runs in the family, I guess. She manages about 40 different cast members across all different types of roles with actors of all different levels of expertise. Kelly says this is a place for actors to hone their craft and have fun. Not to mention, she talks about the crew who helps put together the sets, helps with ticket sales, parking, concessions, and more. What other job allows you to be this dramatic? Holly says that she gives a lot of credit to the actors because the actors don't know how people are going to react. So every performer has to make their performance unique each time and improvise constantly. The actors have to go through scare school to get them trained for any inevitable situation. Kelly and others on the management team walk around and make sure that all the actors are safe.
It's a live show where anything can happen and everyone does their share. This is the Noodle Hallway, or the Licorice Hallway. When it's dark, there'll be strobe lights. The strobe lights on the noodles at night offers a really cool, wacky, and trippy effect. Just walking through them in the daytime is disorienting. The Noodle Hallway will actually be used in a key scene in the upcoming movie. Kevin introduced us to this handsome devil over here. This charred-looking fellow is part of a new scene as of this year called Hillbilly Barbecue. Two sisters are going to invite you to come over for a bite, and you'll get to sit at their table. Kevin didn't want to give away too much, but this gentleman over here has seen better days because he's been in the oven a little bit too long. A little overdone, you might say. Meet TJ, the mastermind behind this poor guy. He started working with the Haunted Mansion a few years ago when he was 14. He's a sculptor and painter and apparently has a crazy amount of Instagram followers because of his amazing skills. TJ has some Hollywood connections, such as former Haunted Mansion alum Mark Viniello, who I happen to know through my dad. Mark Viniello has been making monsters for film and television for nearly 30 years with about 100 credits in makeup and special effects. You've seen his work in the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, the Jurassic Park franchise, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy, the Santa Claus trilogy, and so much more. Maybe we'll have to get him on Walsh Wednesday one of these days. TJ and Mark met recently, and Mark gave TJ a lot of advice and tutelage. TJ is getting his first film experience working on the new movie that is filming at the Haunted Mansion this fall. TJ explained his process to us on how he created this handsome guy. It started with a foam mannequin, and then he carved out a head and a skull mask. He then went through the body with tubing to allow for smoke to come out of him using a hidden smoke machine. Fresh out of the oven, as Kevin would say. A lot of high-tech material is involved in creating a figure such as this that you have to learn how to use. Like cornflakes. No, really. TJ explains how you brush on latex and then crush up cornflakes to give that gross, crumbling texture. After you paint it all, it gives off that burnt flesh vibe. Holly wanted to reinforce that people don't always realize how much time and effort goes into something. She's so proud of TJ and all the many steps that go into creating these attractions. A lot of people will walk by, and everyone here at the Haunted Mansion hopes that they can realize the passion and hard work that went into everything in the foreground and background. Kevin McCurdy's Haunted Mansion opens this year on Friday, October 3rd, and will run throughout the rest of October. You can go to thehauntedmansion.com to get your tickets before they run out. I'm Connor.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Holly.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors. First up, we got our friend Andrew O'Grady from MHA of Dutchess County.
Adversity and stress. How do you cope? I'm dealing with a voice issue right now, my own adversity and stress. So let's use AI Andy for the rest of this message. Take it away, AI Andy.
This is Andrew O'Grady, CEO at MHA of Dutchess County. We all move on a scale of mental wellness. It can shift minute by minute, hour by hour, based on what we face. What happens when it piles on? How do you cope? Do you turn to the bottle or vape? Do you medicate with pills not prescribed for that purpose? Do you become short-tempered and argue with others? Are you quick to road rage? These are self-defeating and negative reactions, and they're unhealthy and can lead to self-inflicted further stress. There's no shame in seeking to improve you by engaging in self-care with a therapist. If you do not know where to start, talk to your primary care physician. You can always contact Mental Health America of Dutchess County at 845-473-2500, and if we don't have a specific program to help you, we will help guide you to one.
Thanks, AI Andy. You sound pretty good.
Thanks, Andrew and AI Andy. Next, we have a message from our friend Jeff Feldman from Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, attorneys at law.
Hi, I'm Jeff Feldman. In 1986, when Paul Kleiman and I started our practice, our goal was to create a law firm where you could meet with an attorney and feel confident that that attorney would be with you every step of the way. Today, the firm has been successfully trying cases at all levels of state and federal courts throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital District. We have been selected as one of the best personal injury and medical malpractice defense law firms by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. For all of those years, we were the only firm chosen in any litigation specialty between Albany and White Plains. Your case is important to us. Giving you the time and personal attention you deserve has always been the hallmark of success. Initial consultations are free of charge and always with an attorney.
A message from Dutchess Beer Distributors. From now to the end of November, Dutchess Beer Distributors presents Football Face-Off. Come on out to your favorite Hudson Valley bars and restaurants where you could win free Bud Light and neutral seltzers, along with other awesome prizes. Try your hand at one of their three games: football toss, beer can cornhole, or flick a field goal. You can check out the events calendar to see where Dutchess Beer Distributors will be next in the description of this episode.
Attend the tale of Sweeney Todd. That's right, just in time for Halloween, Core Theater Group presents Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, at the theater at Mountain Lake Park in Warwick, New York, on October 17th through the 19th. Celebrate spooky season with this legendary musical which blends horror and dark comedy. For tickets and more information, please visit coretheatergroup.com. Take steps toward cures by joining the Breakthrough T1D Walk, formerly the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation One Walk, the leading type 1 diabetes walk. As a walker, you'll be part of a passionate community helping make everyday life better for people with type 1 diabetes as we drive towards curing it. This year's Hudson Valley Walk will take place at the East Fishkill Rec Center on Sunday, October 26th, with registration starting at 12 noon. For more information, please visit BreakthroughT1D.org. Up next, we have our friend Philomena Finelli from Impact PR and Communications.
Thanks, Connor. I'm Philomena Finelli, CEO of Impact PR and Communications and a media maven, which is a fancy way of saying that my team and I help companies get in the news, transform leaders into thought leaders, and cut through the clutter with messaging that matters. And we do it all with a smile. Our agency was named the Woman-Owned Small Business of the Year for 2024 by the Metro New York District Office of the U.S. Small Business Administration, and we received the Gold Stevie Award for Women-Run Workplace of the Year, which is an international recognition. But it's not about the awards, it's about the personal interactions. We at Impact PR and Communications pride ourselves on crafting meaningful, results-driven public relations campaigns that are tailored to meet and exceed our clients' goals. If you want to learn more and talk to my team and I, visit PRwithimpact.com and let us know that you found out about us from Walsh Wednesday.
Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show. And play. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape, LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation. Here at Walsh Wednesday, we wear pink. That's better. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and in to talk about it is Dr. Lisa Curcio from Northern Dutchess Hospital. We talk about their annual initiative that is lighting up the Hudson Valley, Light the Village Pink, along with this year's special event, Pink Fest 25, happening October 8th at the Dutchess County Fairgrounds. Hello and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and we got a great episode for you guys today. We're having a special double feature of episodes this week. Our other half is focusing on the spooky part of October, but this part we are talking about how we're lighting October up. Lighting October pink, that's for sure. And we have a really great organization and great person with us today. We have Dr. Lisa Curcio, board certified fellowship trained breast surgeon and breast cancer survivor herself. We're here to talk about Light the Village Pink that's happening all throughout Dutchess County, all throughout October, and their special Pink Fest that's happening October 8th. Lisa, how are you?
I'm doing great.
It's good to see you again. We spoke last year when I was at the radio station. Now we're here under big lights and cameras. How you feel?
I feel great. This is really exciting.
Fantastic. And we got the posters here. We got the pink lights out. We're doing our best to, you know, light the village pink here.
Support us. We love that.
Absolutely.
We love that.
Yes. So let's talk about what Light the Village Pink all throughout October and Pink Fest is all about. Let's start with the overarching part of it then, Light the Village Pink. Let's talk about why October, why are we putting pink lights up everywhere?
So Light the Village Pink is our campaign for October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And it's important for, number one, is for bringing awareness that 1 in 8 women will develop breast cancer throughout the course of their lives. But there are things like mammography that can help to make sure that if they develop breast cancer, they're going to be cured of their breast cancer.
Yeah.
It's also to acknowledge those who have gone, you know, that have gone through breast cancer treatment and are survivors on the other side, or they're currently going through, or those of the women that actually did not survive, to acknowledge them and to acknowledge the battle that they fought and how far we have come over the past several decades with the treatment of breast cancer. And then also we use the Light the Village Pink as a way to raise funds for our breast health program. Prior to 5 years ago, when I came to actually start the program, there were no breast cancer services offered at Northern Dutchess from a surgical perspective. And this just helps us to support some of the things that we can't necessarily always get from the hospital, because budgets are so tight after COVID nowadays. So it really helps us to purchase things or to support positions that are very important for the care of our patients.
Absolutely. And I would just want to remark on what you said there. Since COVID, you started this 5 years ago. That was in the middle of COVID. So what was that like to try to start something from the ground up like that during a time that was one of the most unprecedented periods of not, well, human history, but also like health and medical history?
It was just surreal is probably the best adjective I could use. For instance, when I came out here to, and I was coming from California, to look for a home, no one wanted anyone from California in their homes, fearful that we would bring COVID. So we were severely limited in places we could look to move as we were trekking across country. There was no rentals. I thought, well, maybe I'll rent to kind of see where I want to live. There were absolutely, there was one rental on the market, and that was something like $10,000 a month. So it wasn't even an option. It was just ridiculous. And then, you know, coming here and then trying to tell people what we were doing, like just to go to the physicians within the Nuvance healthcare system and tell them about the services that now were being available. No one wanted to meet with me in person. So I actually brought donuts to all the offices, dropped them off at the front door with my cards and a letter saying what I did. Also just wrote letters to every single physician in the Northern Hudson Valley, just telling them, hey, I'm here. This is what I do. This is who I'll see. Contact me. Here's my cell phone number.
Wow.
So it was crazy.
That's a very interesting and cool grassroots movement that you were doing. I like the idea of dropping off the donuts. I'm sure people appreciated that. I hope they did at least. But that's really awesome. So 5 years later now, we're in a position where we can commune. We can come together. We can do all of this in person. And obviously, like the Village Pink, we're promoting a lot of unity here. But there's a specific day and time where you're trying to get everybody together, make everything pink and fun and get everything going. That's going to be Pink Fest 25 happening at the Dutchess Fairgrounds. First of all, awesome spot.
It's the first of its type. In the past, we've actually been in the heart of Rhinebeck, but we decided that we wanted a bigger venue and we really wanted to celebrate the kickoff of Light the Village Pink. It really is our kickoff event for the month of October.
It's so cool. I got to say, last year was a lot of fun. We were in the parking lot of Foster's and that was a really fun time, but I could also tell that we were really cramming that parking lot last year.
I think we've outgrown it.
Yeah. So, you know, like, love Foster's, love what they do over there. They're very good to people trying to do events like this. But yeah, the Dutchess Fairgrounds, that's awesome. So let's talk about that. What is happening with Pink Fest 2025? What should people be expecting out of this event?
So it'll be a lot like last year, but on steroids for sure.
There we go.
It's bigger, it's better. There'll be more educational stuff. We're going to have booths with education. We'll have our nurse navigators there, our social workers talking to people about what we provide for someone who's diagnosed with breast cancer, the services we actually can bring to them. There's live music. There's going to be things for the kids, different games and events for the kids to keep them busy, including I think we're going to do pumpkin painting.
Ooh, fun.
And the fan favorite last year was the hair tinsel, which I think I still have a hair tinsel in my hair almost a year later. Pink gear everywhere. It'll be just a sea of pink.
Yes.
And also we're going to have gifts for our breast cancer survivors so that we can acknowledge them and really kind of bring to awareness that there's so many people that you don't even realize. You know, when you're in a big group, you don't realize how many women are in that group that have had breast cancer.
No, it's true. Absolutely. You know, it's affected my family. I know you have your personal experience about that. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, it really does cover the gambit. And you never have an idea.
Nope.
That's the thing. It's one of those unfortunate silent battles that a lot of people go through, whatever the form of cancer is. And it can feel so lonely and isolating. But when we have events like this to bring everybody together, it just kind of shows he's like, wow, I do have a community.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I mean, sometimes you'll hear people say, like, you know, some people are very, you know, secretive about it. They don't want people to know. But other times when they start talking about it, it's like they say, and this is so common, the verbiage they use, it's like people come out of the woodwork that have had been through breast cancer. And so I think it's important to know that there is a community, and that community really provides the support you need to get through it. No one should have to go through breast cancer alone.
No, absolutely. And one of the things that you guys are using to show that nobody's alone is, well, it's right in the name there, Light the Village Pink. We have these lights here. We have string lights all around, have the pink, we have the signage, but we also have like pink bulbs. I remember last year I put my bulb up right in my front door. It was pink. Actually, it worked perfectly for both Halloween and for breast cancer awareness, because it was like, Why is that pink? It was just like slightly off at the same time too. So kind of spooky, but also, you know, very bright and happy at the same time. Let's talk about the bulbs and talk about how people can get their hands on them. I'm assuming people can grab bulbs there at Pink Fest.
They can grab them at Pink Fest. For those who actually are at Northern Dutchess, we give them out there, including in my office. I believe Ace Hardware has them, as well as...
I think we have a whole list of shops here. Thank you, Robin, for delivering everything. So
There's Ulster Savings Bank.
There's a lot of stuff here on
Rhinebeck,
the list.
Rhinebeck.
Yep.
The town of Red Hook, the village of Red Hook, and the Red Hook Library.
Absolutely. And then also in Rhinebeck, the Bottle Shop, Ullman and Associates, Rhinebeck Mercantile, Rhinebeck Savings, Rhinebeck Chamber of Commerce, town of Rhinebeck. So there you go. So if you want to get a bulb for yourself, you should definitely head over to the Rhinebeck and Red Hook area. But of course, this is not just for Rhinebeck and Red Hook. This is for Dutchess County. This is for anybody who really wants to get involved in
Absolutely.
This, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Initially, it started off just Rhinebeck, and then Red Hook became involved.
Yep.
And now the town of Clinton has been more involved, because one of our patients actually is part of the government, the local government there. And so it's really a spreading out to all our community. And we want people to be aware, and we want to show people what services are available. You know, prior to me getting here, a lot of people went down to the city to get their care because there weren't services available. So if they want to get treatment in their community, we are here to support them.
No, I hear you on that. Actually, last year, besides my house in Poughkeepsie, I saw a couple other houses in Poughkeepsie, saw a couple of houses in Hyde Park with the pink bulbs out front. And I'm like, I know where you got that.
That's right.
I know exactly where you got that. So yes, Rhinebeck might be the epicenter for all of this, but it is spreading and it's good to see. So if people want more information on this, where should people be going online to learn more? And also, should they be like taking pictures, tagging, things like that? Should they be putting stuff online?
Absolutely. The more attention, you know, because the thing about the Dutchess Fairgrounds, it's an amazing venue, but it's set off on the side. When we were at Foster's parking lot, we had a lot of people who just didn't know about it that kind of walked and became involved. So now we really want to make people aware of the Pink Fest, as well as what we're doing, you know, in the community. So I think the website is www.lightthevillagepink.com with lots of information, ways that you can help to support us, events that will be happening around with some of our business affiliates. And if they have any questions or concerns, the contact information, how to get in touch with us.
Of course. And we'll have all the links and information in the description of this episode. You can also visit newvanshealth.org/lightthevillagepink. And of course, tag Northern Dutchess Hospital, New Vance Health, and you can use the hashtag #LightTheVillagePink. Make sure that you put that all down when you are posting your pink bulbs in front of your house or in your office or string lights like this or your pink t-shirts or your pink sweaters. Make sure that you include that, because we want to spread this all over the place. This is one thing we want to spread. Cancer, we don't want to spread. That's for sure. And that's something that we really want. And that's like the core of all of this. Now, obviously, we've talked about this last year. We have a little more time this time. And feel free as much or as little as you want to talk about. But you yourself are a breast cancer survivor. You were diagnosed relatively young with it, if I remember correctly. Now, where was that in the timeline of your overall trajectory? When did you become the breast surgeon, and then versus when you got breast cancer?
So after I finished my fellowship, I did a fellowship in all cancer surgery, surgical oncology. I actually had a military payback. So I was actually in the United States Air Force in Biloxi, Mississippi. Got married right before we moved to Biloxi. Had my first child about a year and a half after I got there. And my son, who was my first child. He was 9 months old when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm. So I was practicing as a surgeon, doing lots of breast surgery, but also doing other kinds of cancer surgery at the time. Was treated through the United States Air Force and got excellent care through the Air Force hospitals.
I'm happy to hear.
Yeah. After I got out of the military, practiced for a little while longer as a surgical oncologist, and really came to the realization that it was really my calling. My experience with breast cancer was my calling to really participate in making the care better. Now, probably about, I would say, 20 years ago, I dedicated my practice to just breast surgery in general, both benign and malignant cancer.
Mm. Such bittersweet moment, but that's beautiful that you were able to kind of create this legacy out of it. So at the time, as you said, your son was 9 months old at the time. Breast cancer can happen to people of any age, at any time, any circumstance. But, you know, there are plenty of moms out there, matriarchs of the family out there, who are trying to keep everything together for the sake of the family. And then they have this happen to them. As a mom yourself who went through that, what was your experience trying to still be mom while also being a patient? And what do you say to other mothers out there going through the same thing?
So as you might guess, I'm a pretty independently, fiercely independent person. But it was really a time where I had to rely on my community. And we didn't have much of a community because we had just moved to Biloxi. My family was on the East Coast. My husband's family was on the West Coast. So we had to call in the reinforcements. My mother-in-law came down and she actually stayed with us because I went through about 4 surgeries over the course of a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, there were times where I couldn't lift my baby, you know, because I was recovering from surgery. So you really have to rely heavily on people around you. And it's a humbling experience to be on that side of the patient care relationship. But it's also a very enlightening experience. You know, what it feels like to wait for your pathology report, what it feels like to be, you know, wheeled down the hall to a surgical suite where you're not sure what's going to happen. You know, I'm a firm believer that what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. Yeah. And so I think it made me stronger. We are fiercely independent as women and we're the caretakers for everyone else, but there sometimes comes time where we have to be taken care of and we have to let people do that for us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anybody who's going through something, anybody who's very independent and then gets a diagnosis like this or something different, that kind of makes it very difficult to be able to be the independent self, to be able to care for not just others, but themselves as well. And I feel like that's one thing about, you know, society today. We're always focused on the outward, but less on the inward. You said there, you know what it's like to not be able to hold your baby. You know what it's like waiting for those reports. You know what that's all like. Would you say that the way you approached your patients changed after your diagnosis and your treatment? Or was there just something that was always there but heightened?
Part of the reason I went into cancer is because my grandfather died of pancreatic cancer when I was very young. And at that time, you know, they had no idea what he died from. It wasn't until he had his autopsy that they knew. Because CAT scans were in their early infancy. He had very, you know, kind of generalized symptoms. They couldn't put everything together. I wanted to make a difference in cancer care in general.
Yeah.
But I do think that the relationship with me, myself, and the patient, I think, yes, that did change after my cancer experience. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy when you're doing the same thing day in and day out. Sometimes you just don't think about that person going home and thinking about all the things that we just had a conversation about and feeling like they can't reach out to you to ask questions or that you didn't explain it in a way that they can understand it. So I really do try, and I hope my patients would say that I accomplish, you know, to be able to bring things to a level that they can understand why we're doing what we're doing, take out the fear of the unknown, and also create an atmosphere where they're not fearful to ask a question. And so I do think it made me a better physician, a more caring physician, more accessible physician.
Absolutely. And I just want to piggyback off what you said, asking the right questions and feeling comfortable to ask those questions. I think that's a really great segue into what I want to talk about next is the awareness part of it. You know, here we are in October, this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and you know, you see the walks, you see the like the Village Pinks and the Pink Fest and things like this, but it really comes down to the awareness and asking the questions. So for those who are concerned about their health, or for men and women out there who should be like learning more about breast cancer, it's like, what is the best way to advocate for yourself in this time?
Well, I think number one is you have to be proactive. You can't just wait for something to happen and be reactive.
Yeah.
Being proactive is really important. A lot of women mistakenly think that, you know, because they don't have a family history of breast cancer, they don't have to worry about that. But yeah, they don't understand that 75% of the breast cancers that we diagnose are not in people with family history. You know, hereditary cancers are a very small percentage of what we diagnose. Mm-hmm. So if you have breasts, you have a risk for breast cancer.
Yeah.
1 in 8, it's not insignificant. And so, but there are ways that we can look at what your risks are. For instance, we talk about having a risk assessment, and we recommend that women after the age of 22, whether it's with their primary care physician or their OBGYN, they actually sit down and say, what are my risk factors? Do I need to be at a heightened awareness? And so they look at things like age, when they started having their menstrual cycles, if they've had children, what age they've had children, if they've been on birth control, or older women, if they've been on hormone replacement, and whether they've had a biopsy and what that biopsy shown, and if they've had a mammogram, what does their mammogram show? Do they have dense breasts, which are a risk factor for breast cancer? Mm-hmm. And then looking at their family history, we can actually put all of that information into an algorithm and see whether or not they're at a heightened risk. Some things are modifiable, some things are not modifiable. Mm-hmm. We know that there are factors that are not included in that risk model, like, for instance, being overweight. We mm-hmm. know that women that are overweight have an increased risk of breast cancer. Or being sedentary. We know that activity decreases the risk of breast cancer, or in those women who have breast cancer, reduces their risk of having a breast cancer recurring. Eating a healthy diet. If you eat a lot of fast food and processed and ultra processed foods, you have a higher risk of breast cancer. Drinking alcohol every day, a risk factor. Smoking, a risk factor. So there are lots of things that we can change in those risks, but you got to figure out where you're at in your baseline and then appropriately make lifestyle changes.
Absolutely. And when it comes to lifestyle changes, it's more than just simply the people who are looking out for it and newly diagnosed, but let's talk about the survivors as well. Like, you being a survivor, I'm sure you probably had the moment at one point, it's like, what now?
Mm-hmm.
And for all those out there who are wondering, what now? What is life after breast cancer like? I know that's such a weighted question, and there's so much to be said out of that. But when it comes to just themselves, their health, and not just physical health, but the mental toll it takes, what's life after breast cancer?
So you're talking about survivorship. And
yeah,
there's lots of different ways to deal with survivorship. Some people just want to forget that they have breast cancer. And unfortunately, sometimes that happens in our younger patients. You know, they want to get through the treatment and they don't want to think about the fact that they've had breast cancer. They just want to get on with their lives. But those are the women that are at higher risk because they have a longer life to live.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you've had a cancer, you're at higher risk to have a second breast cancer. How you deal with it, you know, is very important. And that's why we have survivorship programs to really educate women. You don't have to focus on it every moment of every day after your life, but you can't just forget that you've had breast cancer.
Yeah.
And so making changes in your life, you know, dealing with any of the side effects of the treatment that you've had, there are so many different ways. And some women, you know, it's almost like a PTSD after they've had breast cancer, depending on their experience.
Yeah.
If they had to go through chemo and maybe they had some people have really bad side effects from chemo, and they have to deal with all that sequelae. So getting them to the appropriate people, whether it's support groups or a therapist to help them deal with the trauma of that experience, is so important to getting beyond and then getting back to a life that's worth living, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we treat someone for cancer and they have so many side effects that they're not living their life to their fullest, we haven't done them any service.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about getting them back to a life that they want to live every day, and that breast cancer isn't an impediment for that life.
No, I hear you on that. It's a crazy thing. You know, I think about my godmother a lot during this time of year. You know, she died in December, so the later half or later quarter of the year, Breast Cancer Awareness Month through mm-hmm. December, I definitely think about her a lot, and I think about that part of the family. So it's a total change, you know. Unfortunately, you know, in her case, she did pass away.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I also have family members and friends who have survived, but it's such a change, not just for the, you know, the actual survivor, but the family and the community around it and the adaptations that you have to make.
Absolutely.
So when it comes to that and making sure that you prevent anything from coming back or just preventative in general, when it comes to mammograms, how often should people be getting themselves checked? And how accessible is it? Because I know that there's a misconception that it's really hard to get into at times, or probably a lot of money, but there are programs out there that help get men and women in for free or for a reduced cost, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. There are programs out there through some of our partner affiliates like Miles of Hope and then Susan G. Komen that actually will help people who have no insurance get imaging, particularly if they have a symptom. So that is always available. And most, like, most facilities will have resources to help people with that. In terms of, you know, starting from the beginning, when should you start getting a screening mammogram is very important information. And, you know, these are the things that we try to bring out in Breast Cancer Awareness Month, although I feel like every day should be Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
I'm sure for you, every day it truly is in your field of work.
It is. But I think everyone should be thinking that way. But, you know, they really should start with a screening mammogram if they do not have family history at the age of 30.
Okay.
I'm sorry, at the age of 40. At the age of 40. And they should be getting a mammogram yearly starting at the age of 40. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, if they have a family history of someone who has an early diagnosis, so say they had a mom who had diagnosis at 40, they should start screening 10 years younger than the earliest person diagnosed in their family.
Oh, good to know. Wow. Yeah. All right. So that in that case, something like 30 would be worth going off
to
do.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, you know, I feel like I keep hearing younger and younger diagnoses of things every day. So.
Well, that is a statistic that's actually been very concerning. There are more and more women under 40 being diagnosed with breast cancer, and we're not quite sure why that is. Whether that's, you know, a lot of women that are pursuing careers delay childbearing. And we know that the older you are when you have your first child, that does increase your breast cancer risk.
Really?
Yes.
Why is that?
Something about stimulating the breast after it's getting closer to menopause that causes more errors is the way I kind of look at it. But we know that you reduce risk by having your children young, for instance, in your 20s.
Huh.
But after you start having your first live birth after 30, that does increase risk to a certain degree.
Fascinating. Wow. Okay. And, well, the fact that, yeah, a lot of millennials and Gen Z really are waiting and pushing off. And honestly, as somebody, I'm a late Gen Zer, even though I kind of relate a lot more to millennial culture, whatever. But it's like, I don't see myself having kids anytime soon. My girlfriend and I, we agree on that. We're happy where we are. And if it happens one day, it probably won't be for several years.
Yeah.
So I hear you on that. Oh, my gosh. That's crazy to think about. So with that being said, here we are again. October, as much as we want to get the awareness out there, we want to get the celebration out there. So, Lisa, as we're wrapping this up, just want to leave on what kind of nugget do you want to share with people out there, whether those with family history, those who survived, those who've lost, whatever, to anybody out there in the breast cancer community, in Dutchess and beyond, do you have any last little nugget you want to share with them?
So, breast cancer is a very curable diagnosis as long as it's found early.
Hmm.
A screening mammogram that picks up a cancer that you cannot feel, the survival's over 95%. So there's no reason not to get your mammogram at the appropriate time. For young women, they need to examine their breasts and be proactive if they find any changes.
Mm-hmm.
And they should also do a risk assessment with their doctor and make sure that they shouldn't start screening earlier based on their risk factors.
Yes, absolutely. I do have actually one last thing to add in because I realize we haven't mentioned this, and this is a really fun one. You guys have a special ice cream flavor for like the Village Pink, right? It is Dell's Farmhouse Creamery, and I love the name, Check Your Cherries.
So they developed a flavor for October Breast Cancer Awareness called Check Your Cherries, and I believe it is a...
We got it right here. I hope it's cherry based on the name, Check Your Cherries. Is it not?
Huh? Yes,
yeah.
Please.
I believe it's a vanilla ice cream with a cherry ripple.
Vanilla ice cream with a cherry ripple.
Sounds fabulous.
Thank you, Robin. I should have put a mic on you. I told you I should have.
I'm not the star of the show.
The most important thing to know is 100% of the proceeds from selling the Check Your Cherries pints will go towards our Northern Dutchess Breast Surgery Health and Breast Health Program.
Terrific. And as I'm seeing here, starting October 1st, when this will be airing, it'll be available at Dell's Roadside, Rhinebeck, and Kinderhook. And as you said, 100% of the proceeds. That's really cool. 100%. That's awesome. You don't hear that very often, but to be able to have that kind of collaboration, and it is only limited time while supplies last, right?
That's correct.
Yep. So go out there and get it now. Eat it up.
No, I'm going to. That sounds delicious. Honestly, do people need an excuse to be eating ice cream?
Absolutely not.
But if you need one, do it for a good cause. That's fantastic.
We would appreciate it.
Absolutely. I know I'm going to be checking this out. I definitely want to grab my hands on it. All right. That all being said, make sure that you check out PinkFest. That's going to be happening Wednesday, October 8th. We'll have all the information in the links in the description of this episode. Not just that. Check out the Dell's Farmhouse Creamery. Definitely want to get a taste of that while supplies last. And if you want more information on breast cancer awareness and things going on with Northern Dutchess Hospital, we'll have all the links for that in the description as well. Lisa, thank you so much for being here on this episode.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm Connor.
I'm Lisa.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, Locks That Rock Hair Design, Dutchess Beer Distributors, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, Walsh Valuation, and Day Rock. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. You can support this channel by becoming a Patreon member with memberships as low as $5 a month. With that, you can get behind-the-scenes content, your name featured in the credits of each episode, and access to the Spend Some Time chat. You can find that and more by scanning the QR code on your screen or by going to the links in the description. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.